Captain's log, stardate 0416.21. The crew are settling into their roles nicely as Apocalypse Video prepares for its second Trekcast episode, Measure of a Man. And while this second season episode does in fact feature Commander Riker with his trademark beard, I worry that it will not be enough to convince Michael of William Riker's strong points as a character. Hopefully this hearing over whether or not Lieutenant Data is property, of which Will is serving as prosecutor, will prove his non-douchiness as a character.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Next time, on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
It's unjustified, it's unfair. He has rights.
A Starfleet experiment threatens to dismantle Data for android research.
And what's at stake?
My very life.
No, Captain Picard is Data's last hope for survival.
What is he? A machine.
And now a man will shut it off.
Objection.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Hello, welcome back to another exciting adventure of the Apocalypse Video Trekcast. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by fellow Trekkies, Jackie.
Hello. I'm Michael. Sticking with my Data impression.
I thought about doing a Picard impression, but I'm like, nah, I better not.
It's for the best you didn't, Dave.
I liked it.
That other voice you heard was Michael.
Bonjour, mon capitaine.
That's cute.
In light of the subject matter of this particular episode that we're watching, season 2's Measure of a Man, I thought it'd be appropriate if we activated the holoform version of our own sentient AI, Chad.
Hello.
I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on this episode, given that you are an AI. And as I said, I think you're sentient, but many may disagree. I don't know.
I hope this wasn't too traumatic for Chad to watch. It seems like there's a lot of stuff that could be pretty close to home.
Well, before we get into the episode proper, I would like to address a slight controversy from the previous Trek episode that we did. And it's a controversy surrounding you, Michael.
What? What did I... Is this again
you.
That I don't like Riker?
Big Butt 69. No.
No, no.
A lot to say.
No, this is in regards to your comments about The Mandalorian.
Oh, what did I say about The Mandalorian?
We were talking about Picard, the show Picard specifically, and to paraphrase you, Mike, I don't have the exact quote, but you're basically like, yeah, anyone who likes, like, you know, actually what I'll do, I'll play the clip right now.
I can't even get into it.
Yeah.
Jesus.
that's
people
the thing that, where...
People yeah. who wanted... People who, like, think The Mandalorian is the best show ever probably like Picard. Okay.
So, yes, disparaging remarks against Mandalorian.
I'll stand by that.
Actually, it wasn't Big Butt 69 who was the source of the controversy, or rather who was offended. It was me! Yours too! Because I say, how dare you compare The Mandalorian to Picard?
Okay, listen. If you listen to the full context of the quote, Dave, rather than your editing, you're misconstruing what I'm saying. I'm not saying The Mandalorian's bad. It's a perfectly fine show. But, you know, there's some wastelanders out there who may think that The Mandalorian is the best thing that has ever been put to film, that it's the pinnacle of Star Wars art. And I think there's some Venn diagram of those type of people and fans of Picard might overlap.
Okay, that's a bit more diplomatic, I suppose.
You know, the people who are like, The Last Jedi ruined Star Wars, but The Mandalorian is the best thing since the original trilogy. I bet those people might like Picard.
Okay, because the way I took it was, like, you thought Mandalorian was trash, it was garbage, and you didn't like it. Like, from the tone that you had in that quote that I pulled in.
No, again, Dave, you got to listen to the full context. I'm not saying if you like The Mandalorian. I think if you're the kind of person who's like, The Mandalorian's the best thing since sliced bread, you might like Picard. You might be
you
an
might
idiot.
Be a redhead.
I'm calling our listeners morons for liking things I don't like, Dave.
Yeah, okay. Alienate them. Do it.
Well, I just wanted to
Fuck
bring that
you.
Up because, like I said, it wasn't Big Butt 69. It was me. I've been fuming about it since you recorded that.
I'm surprised you weren't Big Butt 69.
No,
no Dave is Big Butt 420.
Big Butt 420, yeah. Okay.
Oh, man. Well, let's get into it. Measure of a Man, Season 2 of Trek. And you'll notice, so this is our second episode. As we mentioned before, we're not going to go, in order. And we're going to jump all around to whatever episodes we like. And eventually we'll get to the shittier ones. This is probably... I think it's arguably one of the best known and most popular episodes of this season and maybe of the show overall. It's one that's brought up a lot in like best of discussions of Trek and all that stuff. And compared to the first episode we watched, the pilot, this is infinitely better than Encounter at Farpoint and leaps and bounds better just pretty much in every way compared to that episode. And for me, it's probably one of my more favorite episodes of the series, like overall. I think it touches on a lot of things that I really enjoy about Star Trek, like in particular Picard, like at a court hearing or something, defending something. And as I said, you know, I think I mentioned this off air, but I really like it whenever Picard says zeal, like when he says you have zeal, like I just get shivers, like, oh, whenever he defends somebody or gives like a speech, it's like, to me, it's like peak Star Trek. I don't know. What about you guys? Brief overall impressions of this episode. Like, Jackie, you're a big-time Trekkie. What was your sort of overall thought after this episode ended?
Yeah, it definitely, like, because we talked about this last time about Riker specifically, but the show broadly about growing the beard. And
yes, we get bearded Riker.
We got the beard, and I think the show itself, by this point of season two, which is not super far along, but it is like it's gaining steam. It is this episode is definitely a like growing the beard moment of the show, where like it does definitely, I think, capture like a lot of what a lot of people love about Star Trek as a whole, where it allows itself to be like so slow and earnest and just like beautiful, and it isn't like embarrassed by any of that, and it doesn't try to like distract you with like a planet side romp or whatever, and it just like is comfortable.
Planet side romp? What?
You know,
what
just
is
that classic like Star Trek thing of like, and here's the B plot where we're on planet and
you know where they go to like the studio lot where it's just like
where it's
a red
backdrop and
yeah, everything's
some fake
red
because
it's an alien world and
that's an interesting point to bring up. There was no B plot in this episode. It was all just Data.
Yeah, and that's why I say it like it really does well, and it reaches that like very Star Trek like earnestness, which I think like the best kind of Star Trek is. So I loved the episode. It was also one of my favorite kind of Star Treks, and that was a courtroom drama. They love doing that on TOS. There's so many times where it's like, well, now Kirk has got to go to court.
Well, thankfully this courtroom drama didn't end with Captain Picard like pulling out the Constitution on an alien planet and going like, you
God.
See, this is the Constitution and it's very cool and your place sucks. You should do this.
You should have the American Constitution. Yeah, it wasn't that at all. It just was itself.
You see, Ferengis are 3/5 of a normal Federation citizen. It's yeah, we great. Haven't gotten it's a perfect to the Ferengi system. Yet.
Oh God.
We might have to tackle the Ferengi in our next episode, but
oh.
To be honest, I don't want to because I don't like those characters.
You mean the,
those are like the
aliens that
for
were
me,
designed to be obnoxious? And
yeah, exactly.
Unlikable.
They're literally
like
buttheads.
Like, I don't know what the Ferengis are supposed to be a racist caricature of, but I know they have to be like a. They seem like racist caricatures of something. Like, I don't know well, what. But
maybe
yeah.
It sounds like the next episode is going to be all Ferengi all day, all night.
Measure of a Ferengi, is that the next
one? Well, what about you, Mike? What was your kind of and Mike? And I think I don't remember if this has come up on the show or not, but in your past life, you used to be a lawyer, right?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the legal profession.
Yeah. I mean, there's no law now. It's only Merton Hoof's law, but.
Well, yeah, there's the law of Hoof. it's a pretty simple law, really. You give him cartoons or die.
Not much to study.
I think that's it. It was crazy because we were listening, or Jackie and I have been watching in the vents just all of Star Trek, right? So we watched the original series, and we've been watching some TNG, and it's, like, fine. But when we watched this episode together, like, I looked over to Jackie at one point and just kind of whispered, like, this is better than anything we've seen, like, by far.
Wow. Like, so all of the original series up to this point, or rather, all the original series, all of Next Generation, this is, like,
oh, okay. Well, I don't know if I'm saying this is better than TOS Peaks.
Okay.
I mean, it's different. It's
yeah,
up there.
The
it's
high
up,
points of TOS are different than the high points of TNG.
Totally. But just in the TNG run, starting from the pilot... to now, I was just like, this is leaps and bounds. Like, this is, I'm starting to see the magic of what this show could be, you know?
Yeah, like, if you were watching this live in the 80s or whatever, just every week, and you're like, yeah, that Star Trek, you know, the reboot that they're doing, like, I kind of liked season one, it was kind of goofy, and then you're watching season two, and this episode, like, premieres, and you're like,
yeah,
holy
like,
shit.
Marge, get in here!
I think this is, like, a good show.
New Star Trek's real good now!
Star Trek's good now!
Yeah, it's like it blew me away. Like this was giving me the kind of like literal like chills that I was kind of surprised and excited to see when watching the original series for the first time, and just being like, wow, this is like incredible. So yeah, I loved it. I really liked it. I love how slow it was. I loved like talking about Picard, right? Like think of what that show is like, and then here. This opens on just like probably like more than 5 minutes maybe of just people playing poker. And it's like, it's not even edited fast. Like it's just static shots. And it feels like you're watching a play or something. It has such a different vibe.
It does have a very relaxed, like black box theater opening of just
yeah,
like,
the light like over the table was super bright. Yeah, it almost felt like a play you would see that they act out in Star Trek: The Next Generation. Yeah, like the setting because they always have plays that they
it's,
do. Yeah.
It's one of Data's plays that he's putting on with pressure.
Yeah, it was incredible, and you know we talked about the beard. That's a great addition to season two. I think maybe a greater addition is Guinan, and we
Guinan.
See
Guinan.
Guinan. Guinan. Am I getting it wrong?
Fake fan.
Strike one, Mike.
I never said it was. This is pretty much all new to me. Guinan. Yeah, she's like so good. I mean, I guess it's Whoopi Goldberg like in her prime acting wise.
Yeah.
And it feels that way. And the scenes with her, especially in this episode, they feel really special. They remind me of like scenes where I don't know, like it's almost like she's like the Obi-Wan or something, like mm-hmm, people just going to her yeah. for like advice or you know, like it's like they're praying and talking to God or something, you know, some fill in of that equivalent where they're just kind of talking out their problems and she doesn't really like it's not like they just go to her and she tells them what the answer is, but it's like she guides them to like kind of find out the core of what's going on. And yeah, it's great. The whole episode's good. I feel like it treated me like I was like not idiot. Like, yeah.
Imagine.
We'll get into it. I don't want to turn into the Chris Farley show, but
yeah. Well, what about you, Chad? Like, how long? Because you were a huge Trek fan in your human life. Like, had it been a long time since you'd seen this episode?
Probably not. I rewatched this a lot for some reason. I don't know. Too lazy to try to find another show. I'll just throw this one on.
So that's what those blinking lights I always see are. Like when it's like late at night and I go out to get like a live wire or something, I see the computer console and it's just blinking constantly. You're just always watching Star Trek.
It does explain why he's always so good at digital poker.
Well, like we always get into this when we have a new person on when we're talking like a show or a series or whatever. Like, what was kind of your history with Next Generation?
Oh, I watched it when it first came out. Like, just, I didn't religiously watch it, I guess I'd say, but if it was on, I was watching it. And me and my brothers all liked it. Watched it plenty. Reruns, watch it again. Just yeah, watched.
Chad,
a lot.
Did you watch it like when it was like in the first years of the 90s, like when it was originally airing?
Yeah, at least some of it.
Wow. What a time.
Chad is forever in that he lived through the 80s.
I also had older brothers that were watching it, and then so I'd watch it even before maybe I'd have been interested.
That's the best way to get into things, is older siblings putting something on.
That's how I got into horror movies and Friday the 13th and all that shit.
Chad's brother was clearly more refined than yours, Dave.
Well, let's get into the episode, Mike. I'm going to give this. I'm going to give the duty of explaining the plot synopsis to you specifically, since you used to be a lawyer. I think you're perfect for giving the synopsis on this one.
Yeah, it's basically so Data is one of the characters on the show, one of the main characters, and he is an android. And I think something this episode establishes that I didn't think I realized about Data when I was a kid watching the show. The Data's not, it's not like android technology is this good in the future. Like, he's an anomaly, and people don't know how he was made. They know who made him, but he's dead, and they don't know anything about it. So Data is, just in case anyone out there in the waste didn't know, Data's like the only one that's like them. So the beginning of this episode is pretty much a Starfleet captain comes in from another ship.
Well, first there's a poker game.
Well, yeah, I'm not. Well, but just the plot, just the plot.
I just wanted to note that I think that is the first of the TNG poker games we see. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah. Well, it's because Data, yeah, I would say it probably is because, like, Riker bluffs and Data's like, boom.
That's right. It's the whole scene, yeah, of, like, they're explaining, like, this is a poker face.
Okay, I'll bet you the poker game. It opens Data's on character. A beautifully lit poker table, and Data has a visor, which is the best thing ever. He's the only one dressed up for the game.
He's got accessories.
I'm surprised he doesn't wear, like, a vest with, like, you know, cards.
I want him
like,
to put on, like, the arm garter. Like a vest. Data loves dressing up.
He needs like a little thing of scotch next to him.
I will not drink it, but I was told that.
So, basically, the episode is there's a Starfleet captain who's visiting, who has someone on her ship who wants to take apart Data to study him and replicate him. And it's really quickly revealed that Data will likely not survive this procedure.
Because this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Right.
This guy hasn't even a positronic brain.
Data doesn't want to die, so he quits Starfleet, and the captain...
And no one wants Data to die. Everyone's fighting for Data's life here.
Right. And so the captain of the other ship says, oh, Data, you can't resign Starfleet. You're property, not a person. And thus sets up basically a courtroom drama that is between Picard and Riker arguing for and against whether Data is a human.
Well, has, like, consciousness, basically.
Yeah, is not a human, but, like,
has
is person or property. So that's basically the episode, or like what it's about.
Basically, no disassemble.
No disassemble.
Yeah, so you mentioned the card game. I think this is the card game, or the first card game we see, and it's also I think it's important to really mention the card game because up to this point, I don't know if the show is really good at delving into the characters as well as it could. Like it was more just dealing with like the events that they would encounter more than the like character stuff. I feel like watching the first season. I like you guys have been like watching the first season on your own. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah,
like,
totally agree.
Yeah. It's like I feel like season one had a lot more, like if it got more into the personalities, it would be like between like Beverly and Wesley of like a familial kind of, you know, relationship or love or something like that. And yeah, season two starts that very TNG thing of like, no, these characters are all like friends with each other and like hanging out together.
It's very,
and they
like,
do hang out together.
It's, I feel like it's just more nuanced in this than it was. Yeah. Like, it's not like bullet points. It's more like, you know, in season one, when you find out stuff about, when you get to know the characters more, yeah, it's like bullet points. Like, oh, they had a thing to, they were in the past, or like they were maybe had a romantic relationship or something. But this is more just getting to see how the characters are and like what their concerns are, and I think a
and what
big,
they do in their off hours, and just like,
and like I think a big change that made that happen, like I was saying, was Guinan and the bar that she's in. Just the idea that like now the characters, one of the main set pieces is going to be a bar, and this character who's really kind of like a sage, you know, guiding people through problems. So now there's all these scenes in there that are normally, when there's a scene in the bar or talking to Guinan, and it's not like major stuff with the plot or like, oh, how do we, you know, deal with this new alien or whatever. It's more like, why do I feel this way? Or like,
yeah, you know. Now that, I mean, the way you talk about that, yeah, of Guinan is this like sage character that makes me think about 10 Forward as like this inherently confessional place. And
it's
like
kind of like a church,
and very well, and just that a bar is like, it's much more intimate. A lot of the scenes we see in 10 Forward are like two characters at a table talking to each other, or yeah, talking with Guinan, and it's a very like just like more intimate, more like, again, kind of natural, because if you worked and lived on like the Enterprise or something, you're like, well, I'm gonna go hang out at the bar now.
It's such a good bar.
Yeah.
And one of the things I appreciate a lot about it, and I think is a good example of one of the things TNG does to make their place just seem like a nice utopia. Like, they drink at 10-4, but they also, like, lots of times they're hanging out there and they're not drinking alcohol. Like, they're drinking, like, coffee or tea or whatever.
Or they're having, like, ice cream. Yeah.
Well, I think it would be, like, a different vibe if, like, people are always hanging out at the bar drinking, like, beer and, like, whiskey. Like, it's like, Jesus, is everyone in here? Is this, like, Mad Men? Like, is everyone
that's
drunk
for
on
TOS.
The job? Like, they do drink, but lots of times they're there and they're, like, drinking. Like, in this episode, Guinan and Picard are, like, drinking, like, a latte, like, late at night, you know? And so it makes it more liberal, wholesome, I guess, is, you know? It's nice to see that it's, you know, in the future, it's not like everyone's getting drunk all the time to relax. Like, they drink, but they also, like, we'll have tea or whatever.
I like
still like a nice cozy spot.
I'd like to correct you real quick, Mike. You said 10-4. It's referred to as 10-forward, not
10-forward.
Yeah, when they go 10-4? Down 10-4. Oh,
thank you for saying that before
that's
I tried
what,
to get in there.
That's what the cool kids call it, 10-4.
Yeah, can I get into 10-4
the, like,
the bar?
The teens on the ship are like, let's go get some cappuccinos at 10-4 later.
Too much of a burden to say ward.
Yeah. The youth.
Yeah, well, we mentioned the poker game and people getting, like, you know, a bit more. We get a bit more introductions to characters or backstory or whatever. We also get, we get Guinan, but we also get our first appearance, at least, you know, not in the show, but for our purposes, of Pulaski, Dr. Pulaski. Which I think who as a character for me battles with Deanna Troi's mother, Roxana Troi, as most annoying, irritating character in the show. I
love Troi's mom. I'll fight you on that.
Dr. Pulaski. Well, and here's the thing. It's maybe not quite fair to Dr. Pulaski. It's certainly not fair to the actress who played her. Because, again, I think I mentioned this on the previous episode, but if you've ever seen that documentary, Chaos on the Bridge, where they talk about the making of the first two seasons of Star Trek Next Generation, for whatever reason, the writers didn't like this character. I don't think they liked the actress, maybe. That might be alleged, but... They did this character no favors, and they couldn't wait to get rid of her.
And the I think on that documentary, they said that they were trying to make her character like Bones.
Like unlikable.
I don't think they wanted it to be unlikable. But
the way she was written and the way she comes across every episode, she's like combative. And we don't see it in this episode, which is surprising because in all the other episodes that she's in with Data, she thinks of Data as a machine. She's like,
I think what they were trying to do was the classic Bones Spock dynamic. But they went too far with her.
Yeah.
Like Bones was playful and you knew he had
a friendship.
Yeah. You knew deep down he's like, what, you know. Whatever, but
well, I care about
definitely.
That
I'm not super annoyed by her, but I do think she doesn't fit for sure. It's like she's in a different show or something. But and I also definitely get the vibe that, and I think it's the writing, that she straight up does not like. It doesn't seem like she's teasing the crew. It seems like I would so much rather be at another job right now. Like she's like the, you know, we've all worked with people like this, especially you know, at the Apocalypse Video Store.
It's only been us. I just want to point out, like, there haven't been any other employees. It's only been us.
We all know
guy. When you say, we've all worked with people like that at Apocalypse Video.
Well, Dave, I think didn't I replace someone who was killed in Mortal Kombat?
That guy sucked.
But what I mean is, like, the person who hates the job. Like, the person who's like, I hate this job so much, and I'd so much rather be doing anything else.
I think it does come down to a lot of just, like, the writers didn't know what to do with her. Maybe the actress wasn't jazzed about the role. Because that is, I mean, another running thing throughout the first couple seasons of many of the, well, most of the actors, period, but many of the actresses who were like, can I please do something on this show? And the writers were like, no. And at this point,
yeah, he had to be cleavage.
At this point, on
get out of my office.
On our watch,
you do that too good, Dave.
At this point, on
our
watch,
Tasha
Yar, exactly
what I told Ryan when he tried to quit. I'm like, Ryan, you're all about the cleavage now. Get back to the job.
Got
to
put him in his place. but at this point of the show, Tasha Yar has passed away in just a really stupid, like, obviously fuck you from the writer's death. Because, again, the actress was like, I would love to, like, do something. And she never got to do that. The actress who played Beverly Crusher, I think, was a similar thing, which is why she's gone for season two. But because it's, you know, that's Wesley's mom, they can't just kill her off. No cares in the world. So it starts, season two starts with a like, well, Wesley, your mom took that other job at so-and-so, but it'll be okay. And I know you miss her and blah, 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 which is why Crusher's able to come back. But it does all kind of stem from this place of the mostly male writers, like, not having, one, the fully realized idea of what TNG should be at that point, but again, also not really having it all in terms of, like, writing the female characters.
Hey, folks, this is Dave cutting in real quick from the future! Or I guess from the past, and should be listening to this after I post. Anyway, around this point in the recording, we were having some audio issues that were messing with the volume, so we had to stop and have Chad recalibrate everything before we could get back to the case, as it were. Anywho, apologies for the technical glitch. It won't happen again, probably. Now let's get back to the show. Maximum warp, Chad.
Engage!
So where were we? We were talking about Pulaski, right?
Talking about Pulaski, I did want to add, because I just mentioned the like mostly male writers, which is true, that I'm on the Wikipedia or the Chattopedia for Measure of a Man. And specifically, it mentions that this episode is the television debut for writer Melinda M. Snodgrass, and I wanted to shout that out. She was previously an attorney at law practice.
Really?
Before she became a writer. So that's makes sense.
You don't say. That
this is a really strong episode. And that she, it also notes that though most watchers perceive this episode as being data-centric, Snodgrass felt that this is a Picard-focused episode.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of both.
Yeah.
For sure.
Anyway, I wanted to shout that out. And that does make a lot of sense that she was a lawyer.
There's some interesting Picard stuff with this one, especially his relation. Let's break down his relationship between Captain
Lavoie.
Oh, yes.
I love Captain Lavoie so much. And I love like their relationship. I feel like this is the most kind of human in a way Picard has seen. Like, he's been so kind of one note a lot in this show, where he's just stone faced and cold and smart is kind of what I've gotten from him.
Your Honor, I'd like to submit into evidence the line, "You're a damn sexy man."
Oh, that is one of my all caps. Drop the line. Notes.
You're such a pompous ass, but you're damn sexy.
And a damn sexy man.
Every scene she's in with Picard when it's not the trial, she just looks like she's ready to just throw down and just be like, I want to, let's just do it, Picard. Let's just do it right now.
You know, I never thought I would say this, but it's good to see you again. It brings a sense of order and stability to my universe to know that you're still a pompous ass. And a damn sexy man.
They have chemistry.
Yeah. No, when she first appears, I think Michael and I turned to each other and I was like, is this horny? And then the scene goes on and she says like a damn sexy man. It's like, okay, yeah, like super horny.
What makes it even more funny that scene in the beginning when she walks into the bar on that starbase and he sees her. It's so funny. As they have this discussion in front of the, the glass and you see space outside, as they're talking and you can tell that they have a history, you see the Enterprise awkwardly come into frame in the window, and it almost looks like the Enterprise is like spying on their conversation.
Because like a Looney Tunes. And
it looks like someone like peeking through, like, what are you guys talking about?
Yeah, you can imagine the bridge crew picking
up on. If you cut to the bridge, the Enterprise, the camera is like on the window, and they're just all like looking like Data, like, can you read their lips? What do they say?
Are they flirting?
Data, did she just say ass?
Scotty, turn it up. We can't hear. Focus on the sound. No.
Did she just say sexy? Like, Data, we need context.
Yeah, it's it was that. I feel like is also a classic like TOS kind of thing of like, and here's the old flame, and let's bring this in. And then it was also a courtroom drama because,
except in TOS's case, in Kirk's case, he had a lot of old flames.
There were quite a few old flame episodes.
Did you guys get the feeling that she was an old flame? I didn't.
An old flame, but yeah. But their whole relationship, actually, to get right into it, was, she was the one responsible for, like, I guess, heading up the court-martial, against Picard when his ship was lost or destroyed or whatever.
Yeah, there's, like, a previous episode that gets into the, like, Stargazer stuff of an old ship, a previous ship he was on. And that their relationship is very antagonistic because she, like, you know, literally was court-martialing him. But I felt like there was...
Yeah, I think they were, like... I got the feeling notes that, of, like they when had, they were in Starfleet together...
Yeah, like, they had, like, a history beyond that. Which is why, like, when she court-martialed him, it was like, look, I know we have X, Y, and Z, but I got to do my job. And he was like, I get it, but also, fuck you.
Like, I think they definitely say something that implies she knew him when she was doing the court-martial.
And so it felt funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought they like nothing like crazy, but I in my mind it's like they had a thing in college or something.
Well, like every scene, it's funny. Like every scene that she's in with him, she has this look like. Picard, in the same way,
they have legit chemistry like that. Well, is
in the same way that Commander
so
Maddox has the same looks towards Data in a lot of scenes.
Oh god,
yeah, let's talk Maddox.
Is Maddox like part of this Captain's crew? Is that the idea?
Well,
he's
Daystrom
just a scientist.
Institute. Yeah, he's a scientist.
Okay, he's just on the starbase that they're all at. Yeah. So yeah, we like see this interaction, and then we see. Is that basically where we were now introduced to Maddox?
Yeah, the Maddox comes in. It's like, oh, we need to see Lieutenant Data, the Commander Data, and
I love the way it's dropped too, because like the Commander Maddox comes on board the ship with I think an admiral who is wearing the tightest shirt I've ever seen in Star Trek. Like it's so tight, his arms are like just up.
They got some
like,
tight shirts in Star Trek.
But I love the way it's dropped. The whole like point of the episode, like Commander's going, it's like, yeah, man. The Enterprise got like a 500-year legacy, and every ship that's bore the name has been great. Picard, you're doing a great job. Also, this guy's here to steal your android. All right, I gotta go.
He's gonna take your dude.
Just dropped casually in conversation. All right, he's gonna take your android, disassemble him, and take him for parts.
Star Trek episode that is sort of the antagonist is kind of like Starfleet in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be taking your android here, Jean-Luc. I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, 500 years of faithful service. Anyway, we're going to take this.
About Maddox, I was trying to figure this out. Who does he look like? Because the closest
he looks like
I could
Gene
come...
Siskel.
Oh, okay.
I thought
the
he
closest...
looked like Gene Siskel.
The closest I came was like a malevolent, stretched out Jason Schwartzman.
Oh, okay. In the recasting of this, I could see him playing that role very well.
Yeah, yeah. But he, the whole time I was like, who does he look like? Besides, again, a creep.
He's very well cast because I feel like I imagine if I had seen this guy in real life, I would not have thought this. But seeing this character, like, as soon as you see him, you're like, this guy sucks. Like,
fuck this guy.
I hate him. I don't trust anything he says. And he's like, he does that without before he like even says anything.
Well, it's probably that look he gave Data that even Data could tell was odd.
Yeah, he's like, why is he looking at me like that? What the fuck?
I thought as someone who doesn't know anything about Star Trek, you know, Next Generation, I thought he was going to have been like Data's inventor. And it was like the guy who invented him or something.
Looking good, like, Data.
That's where I thought. And I didn't think those looks were creepy because I thought it was.
They
like,
were so creepy.
Were,
he's literally
well,
looking at him.
In retrospect,
like,
they were. But like.
I'm surprised he didn't catcall Data. Like, hey, baby.
But I thought he created him. So I thought that was like the gaze of like a proud parent kind of thing. Not like.
It was a gaze, all right. It was not the proud parent gaze.
Yeah, I mean, clearly I was wrong. But
that was the gaze of like, I'm going to insert something into his port later.
Oh, God.
I don't think that was the gaze either. I think he truly thought of Data as an it, and he was just like, look at that. That's mine.
I'm sorry. I'm just being a creep.
Yeah, and so what we're all dancing around is that guy is from like some weird institute, and he's sort of like a...
Well, I wouldn't say weird. It's respected. I don't think it's...
Yeah,
it's respected, okay?
I think he's like... He reminds me, though, of like Elon Musk. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm Elon
Maybe
Musk from
that's
Tesla.
That's who he looks
kind of thing.
Like.
And, I mean, that's the kind of guy he is like a wunderkind, like a young scientific wunderkind.
But again, he hasn't even built a positronic brain, so like...
So well, yeah, he? Just like Elon Musk, you find out he's like not actually that smart.
Bruce Maddox actually just like purchased a couple startups, and
I purchased the Daystrom Institute.
My
dad was in space apartheid.
His whole thing is like, we're gonna make an army of Datas. Like, I can make, we can take him apart and like see what makes him.
Yeah,
tick.
Take disassemble so we can manufacture a Data for every starship.
And this is all done in like he basically like says this is in like a conference room with Data and Picard, and there's
like Riker and Worf, and like a bunch of people are there.
Is the doctor there at that time?
I don't know.
Pulaski. But yeah, like it was like very it felt interesting, like that they were like, he was just unloading, like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. And Data asks him like a question, kind of like about, because he's like not immediately opposed. He's like, huh. And like, well, how
he thinks he's just basically going to camp. Like, oh, I'm going to go to help this guy at the day.
Yeah, I'll go help with the studies. Sure.
Yeah. And he like asks, it's so well done, y'all. And it's like so smart where he just like the way that you find out this is bad is Data just like asks him like a kind of a random question about his, that he knows about his body. Oh, so what are you going to do when you like go in with the blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what?
You've constructed a positronic brain?
Yes.
Have you determined how the electron resistance across the neural filaments is to be resolved?
Not precisely.
That would seem to be a necessary first step.
I am confident that I will find the answer once I examine the filament links in your anterior cortex.
But if the answer is not forthcoming, your model will not function.
I do not anticipate any problems.
And Data's like, the whole tenor of the meeting changes, and he's like,
they're like, wait a minute.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, like, Data shifts, and, like, the other characters around him shift of, like, oh no. And that, I think that's the first scene, and we get this a couple times of like, Data himself. Yeah, I think in that scene, Data's like, so you're saying that, like, I won't, you know, if I'm disassembled, reassembled, I won't have, like, my personality. Like, he says it in his Data way, but he's basically saying, like, I have a personality, and when I'm, if I'm reassembled, I won't have that. Is that what you're saying? And Maddox is like, well, yeah, but I don't give a shit. And Data, more than once throughout the episode, which I love so much, is like, no, but, like, I do exist, and I
was playing cards last night.
I was playing cards. Like, I'm learning to paint. I'm clearly, like, that I have a life.
There was such a good... So in that meeting, there's like, such a good moment where, like, just kind of, like, casually Data is, like, saying, like, well, I don't want to lose that. Like, I don't want to lose my personality. And then Picard, like, immediately jumps in and is like, well, this conversation's over then. Like, it's a great Picard moment where it's like, well, they're having this whole conversation, and like Data, not even thinking, saying this as like him intending to end the conversation. He just like mentions, well, I don't want to do this. And Picard is like, because he respects Data as like
a member of his crew,
you know, entity, person, whatever. As soon as he expresses, like, as soon as he hears that Data doesn't want it to happen, he's like, well, then we're done. Like, it's not going to happen.
This is one of my favorite Picard things, actually. I'm just going to call it the Picard walkout. When he states a point, he's made the decision, and he just walks out. The conversation's over. Like, when he goes to see Captain
Lavoie. It's funny you say that, Dave, because I'm thinking that's you always ask to do stuff at the store like that. Like,
and then I leave the store. And
I take the trash. Make all those right declarations.
It's a very captain thing to do, though.
There's no discussion.
Tug down your shirt and storm out.
Data is the property of Starfleet. He cannot resign, and he cannot refuse to cooperate with Commander Maddox.
What if I challenge this ruling?
Then I shall be required to hold a hearing.
Then I so challenge, convene your hearing.
And then just, boom, walks right out. You know, you hear the door.
Well, he's definitely upset about the whole thing. It's like, you know, probably something he didn't even think about. You know, he just thought his Data is sentient and never thought about anyone else treating him differently.
Yeah, never occurred to him that this would happen.
I wonder if in that meeting anyone noticed too, and they didn't like the whatever his name is, the
Maddox,
yeah, because he seemed like disturbed to have to answer Data's questions,
yeah,
and he wasn't even quite facing him, and he'd like answer them to Picard like Picard asked it,
yeah,
I think a lot of it was like he didn't see Data as a person or like,
well, yeah, like, he had to act like his character believed that. And he may even had to, that person, you know, the act or the character may even had to try to do that. Maybe he even thought a little bit, maybe he is sentient. So he had to like, no, I got to double down and show every possible way that, no, this is just an it. Don't treat it like one sentient.
Like, he looked pained to have to like look over to his left and address Data directly. He's like, oh, okay, I guess I got to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's such a contrast from how he was earlier. And like when you first see him looking at Data.
It's yeah, he's like, oh, check out that android. Not bad.
I've got to get that object.
Yeah, he's like, that, yeah, that's what he was.
I got to
like,
get me one of
that's my property. And he's like, my property's acting up.
Yeah. Oh, which one of the great lines of the episode when Maddox goes,
rights, rights. I'm sick to death of hearing about rights. What about my right not to have my life work subverted by blind ignorance?
I'm tired of hearing about rights. what about my rights to just take you?
To not have my God project fail. Like, that's not a right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is like, that is such a timeless line, though.
I'm sick to death of hearing about rights. Because, yeah, that's always what the shitty people mean in their hearts, even if they say something more palatable, is like, oh, I have to respect their rights to. Oh.
There's always got to be someone.
God, it's never ending.
All I'm trying to do here is make a bunch of datas. Get on,
I just want to make
this.
An
What's
army
so
of android
that?
Slaves.
God!
I want to make a slave race. Come on, get with me on this.
What's the problem?
Y'all are being such dicks.
It's always something.
Well, it's after this point when Data is just like, well, I don't want to do that. I'm a person. I'm a person, and my name is Data. Not Data. Data.
I was going to say, when we were talking about Pulaski earlier, that exchange earlier on in season two where she calls him Data, and he's like, that's not correct because my name's Data.
Which is another reason to hate Pulaski.
Well, that's a great example of like the difference between her and Bones. Like, there is no love. Like, that's like a screwed up thing that she's doing. Like,
yeah, she like
I'm
laughs
refusing
and says
to pronounce
like,
her name correctly.
What's the difference?
Like, that reads as like much more like a racist, like gross thing than I feel like Bones. Like, Bones would not say that about Spock. Like,
Bones
Spock would not be
jokingly
like
racist against his alien friend. No, it's something that like I can see what they were going for, but it just never lands with Pulaski.
There's a line Bones wouldn't have crossed.
It doesn't. It sucks.
Well, I don't know if it, I don't know. I guess I'm not as annoyed by her as especially David comparing her to Troy's mother.
I don't feel
that's
strongly.
A bit harsh. But like, they basically wanted to set her up as a character who didn't believe Data was human, and then he could convince her and thereby the audience.
But it's like at this point in season two, I feel like we're already like, yeah, it's our friend Data. Like, you don't need to.
Our robot friend.
But it's still an interesting topic to. What's so different about him and us, and to think about that.
I do like there are some questions they ask about Data and arguments they raise about him not being a person, and that are like, some of them are interesting for sure. And it is like,
what do you mean, Rikers?
Not so much Riker. I think he does a bad job.
I agree, actually.
Riker in court.
That's
terrible.
Another point we need to get to. Yeah, Riker in this episode.
Yeah, should we get to the courtroom?
We should, because there's a lot that happens that I feel like I kind of want to talk about.
Yeah.
So you basically get like, is it after this that you get the backstory with like, Captain Louvois and Picard, and they're like talking about this is where she drops like, I did the court martial against you.
I think
kind
that
of thing.
Was when the first scene they have together, but after the scene with Maddox, Picard goes to Louvois for like legal advice basically, and is like, how can Data like avoid this thing? And she's the one who gives the advice that he could
resign.
And it's only after that, when Data does, like, you know, go with that plan, that it becomes the, like, no, actually, you can't resign because you're
property.
Not a person.
Yeah. But you get, like, he resigns and they have, like, a resignation party.
He has a whole going away party and, like, with all his friends.
They're, like, reading him, like,
Worf gives him a book.
Oh, yeah, Worf gave him, like, a Klingon, like a Klingon literature thing.
Like a very like sweet scene between him and Geordi where Geordi's like, I'm gonna miss my best friend.
Yeah, he just like walks over and he's like, Geordi, why are you sad? Basically. And
yeah, he
Geordi's
walks
like,
over, he goes,
miss
what's wrong with your eyes?
What's wrong with your eyes?
And then it's after that.
It's such a great scene.
It's such a great scene. And then we get the reveal of, or maybe another scene with Lavoie, but it's like Maddox basically convinces her to argue that Data's property and not a person. And then we get the whole courtroom.
Yeah, dynamic. Maddox is basically like, oh, well, I think he's property. And Picard is like, no, I want to challenge that. It's like, well, we can do a courtroom drama, but we'll only do it if Reichard is for the prosecution. And he's like, well, I don't want to be for the prosecution.
Well, that gets Riker's like, question. What?
That gets into a question I had. So Mike, as a former lawyer, and again, this is, and this, you could choke this up to, I think, as you're watching, Chad brought this up, you could choke this up to like, well, it's just story convenience. It has to happen for the story to make it interesting. But I was saying like, Riker even points this out. I was like, wait a minute, I can't do this. Like, Riker, he's my friend. And
I am friends with Data.
Immediately, I thought, conflict of interest court? What the fuck? Like, so, Mike, as a former lawyer, wouldn't that be a conflict of interest in this case?
Can you tell us about Starfleet's laws, please?
If you're prosecuting a friend?
Well, no. He says like, I guess it doesn't. That would be like maybe if he was on a jury or something. I suppose not if he was.
No,
a
I mean like I think yeah. I think it would be a conflict of interest if you're.
I can't believe Maddox would be okay with it. Or
well, yeah, you could be. You could be even Lord, says like
I want Pulaski.
If you're not
she was saying those racist things towards him the other day. I heard it.
If Lavoie was like, if I can tell that you are not trying, like, it's over. And it's like, well, then why not just do it with someone who you're not going to be like, are you trying?
Yeah,
get
and
the
like,
public defender or something.
We definitely see him.
That's probably not a thing in the future.
In the act one or whatever, the first bit of the courtroom drama, the opening, where he's just kind of setting up his case and he's testifying with Data. Riker's given it his all, and he is feeling like he's like, dang, he's like almost trying like too hard. Like he's being
kind of crushing
unnecessarily
it right now.
Like, well, like it's like, you know, you can present your case well, but he was being like really hostile with Data. And
he's
just like
I'm going to win it.
Dick. Like, it's like, you don't have to be like mean to the guy. Like,
well, if he's trying to say he's a thing, then you should treat it like a thing. You can't destroy your own case with how
but
you
but he wasn't
him.
He
Mr.
wasn't just
Data, are you in fact an android, yes or no? Yes.
Mr. Data,
case
are you
closed,
my friend?
Your
The commander is a physical representation of a dream, an idea conceived of by the mind of a man, its purpose to serve human needs and interests. It's a collection of neural nets and heuristic algorithms. Its responses dictated by an elaborate software written by a man. Its hardware built by a man. And now a man will shut it off.
There's a difference between like treating it like a thing and just being like mean to it. I feel like he was like mean to Data.
But people would say you can't be mean to a machine. And so, again, the argument is that this is a machine. Oh, don't worry about being mean to it.
I'm loving this. Well, I love that, way, though, I love I think... that Chad's bringing the cold, hard facts of a machine to this episode,
well, that's
to this
just
discussion.
His crap arguments. I didn't even like him. He's like, again, it was exactly like you just said. Data's an android. Like, yeah, we're not arguing that. That
that's
doesn't
true.
Mean he's not sentient. You know,
well,
that's,
like,
that's the
either
whole thing.
Way,
he's not human,
think,
of course.
Yeah.
Either way, I think after that opening bit, Riker, like, seems like he just gave up. Like, I feel like he just receded back into the trial for the rest of it. And, like, he never asked any, like, cross questions, really. Or, yeah, it seemed like he totally was not trying after that
which
one
is,
little show of force.
Yeah, which is why you wouldn't have a friend be the prosecutor, because you just won't do it as good a job. Even if you're trying and you want to, you're just not gonna.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that Starfleet is flawed.
Well, again, it was like David said, the convenience of the story. And yeah. I think the only payout was at the end when they were having a celebration and Riker wasn't there and Data went to see why. And then he said, I thank you for doing that because it hurt you and I would have had no chance otherwise. Yeah. And I'll never forget that. And so that was like the only reason I think they had him do it.
So Riker, Mike, looking good suddenly?
No. He was doing like he just gave up in a way where he was severely risking, I think, that Lavoie would call a mistrial and say that he was not actually trying.
Yeah.
He had to try a little bit more, I think. He just could have asked like
what more do you want? He took his hand off. Yeah, he bent a steel rod.
He made a thing.
He was an android. It was dumb.
He might as well have just left the courtroom for the rest of the trial.
Hey, did you not hear the officer or judge? I submit my second thing of evidence into the trial. The line.
Pinocchio is broken. Its strings have been cut.
Yeah, wait.
Case closed.
Yeah, he just case closed and then he left.
The point of him turning Data off there, though,
was it just to
be a dick?
I think Riker's strategy at first
was to show, like, look, he is in a machine.
Look at how much of a machine he is. Yeah, I love to when the shot. Just to go back a little bit, I love that we get a shot of like. Late night Riker's like sipping coffee, reviewing his legal strategy.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's
like a really funny moment where he looks really, it's almost like he hitches on to a good argument and you see him kind of like smile a bit. Like he's like proud of himself, but then immediately he frowns. Cause he's like, oh no.
Well, that's what's so funny. He's just looking at like essentially what looks like a schematic of Data's inner workings. And he's like, yep, yeah, I got it in the bag right now. Yeah. He is in fact an android.
Yeah.
I got
little
the proof
do they
right
know.
Here.
He did it, Riker. Speaking of androids, because I just remembered this in my notes, I was curious where, like, this, I like Star Trek TNG in general, but I guess specifically, like, this episode falls along a timeline of just, like, AI stories in culture, because the, all of the arguments that, like, we do finally see for, you know, the Data's like soul basically or like sentience are very well thought out and like thought provoking and stuff. And I was curious, like, I don't know, does anybody know where 1989 is kind of coming from in terms of like that kind of speculative sci-fi?
I mentioned No Days at Embell before this. Short Circuit, the classic sci-fi adventure Short Circuit came out.
The computer who wore tennis shoes.
Five years before this episode, we had Short Circuit, which sort of tackled sort of similar things. They're like, he's not alive, he's a person. And that's when we get the famous line, Johnny Five, he's alive. You know, this was a thing in the 80s, you know, sentience.
I feel like my childhood, especially with like Bicentennial Man and stuff, my child and the Matrix.
I love that that's the one you specifically go to first. Bicentennial Man.
Bicentennial Man. Well, you know, thinking about movies like AI, Bicentennial Man, even the Matrix to some extent, especially like the Animatrix maybe more so. Mm. I really, as a 9 to 10-year-old, thought part of my adulthood, one of the problems of my adulthood was going to be grappling with the ethics of... androids in a way that has not come up yet.
Not yet. There's still time.
I expected it was like, that's going to be the problem of my, you know, little did I know what would happen. But yeah, that I feel it is. I think this was an earlier, I think there were more examples after this than before it.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
I mean, yeah, like Short Circuit is one I can think of off the top of my head that was prior to this, but it's not like they're talking about like this and the Terminator or anything. Well, wait a minute. Is the Terminator, you know, does he have a soul?
Well,
you know?
Well, the talk of consciousness and what exactly it is, I'm sure, has been like,
yeah,
since
like
the beginning of recorded human history.
Yeah.
So
oh, yeah,
just...
definitely.
But the idea
yeah.
of like an android or like a robot being
a human
smart.
Creation.
Well, the android is there to talk about the consciousness and show why is it, what's so different about it. We don't even know. It's just impossible
to just talk about the concept of a soul, if like what that is. If it
well,
is.
And that's to move along. That's kind of what Picard's argument is he goes in and he tries to. He basically is like, how do you define something that's
self-conscious? So the three criteria of sentience.
It was intelligence, aware of itself and its like place, and I forget the third one.
Something else.
Consciousness was
consciousness, yeah.
Consciousness, yeah. And so he's like, he basically goes about proving that Data has all those things. Like, intelligence, duh. Like, okay, that's not, like a given. We all know he knows everything. Self-conscious, he's like, or self-aware, he's like, Data, do you know who you are? Do you know where you are?
Yeah,
do you
tell
know
us
what's
what you're
happening
doing right now.
Right now? And he's like, well, yeah, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. And I don't want to die. And then I forget how he establishes
He didn't consciousness. Establish consciousness. He said, is he or not? I don't know exactly. Are you willing to risk that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where like, it comes. That's where it comes to a head where, LeBlanc is like, you're right. I don't know.
That's the bit where Picard is like, okay, prove that I'm like
yeah,
conscious
sentient.
Or sentient. Like, can you do that? Like, can you prove, can you say anything different about me than you would him? All the differences are superficial. They're not related to his consciousness. It's what he's made of, how he was made. But none of that answers the question of, is he sentient? Is he a person, not a thing?
Single data, and forgive me, Commander, is a curiosity. A wonder even, but thousands of datas. Isn't that becoming a race? And won't we be judged by how we treat that race? Now tell me, Commander, what is data? I don't understand. What is he?
A machine.
Is he? Are you sure?
Yes.
You see, he's met two of your three criteria for sentience, so what if he meets the third? Consciousness, in even the smallest degree. What is he then? I don't know. Do you? Do you? Do you? Well, that's the question you have to answer. Your Honor, a courtroom is a crucible. In it, we burn away irrelevancies until we are left with a pure product, the truth, for all time. Now, sooner or later, this man, or others like him, will succeed in replicating Commander Data. Now, the decision you reach here today will determine how we will regard this creation of our genius. It will reveal the kind of a people we are, what he is destined to be. It will reach far beyond this courtroom and this one android. It could significantly redefine the boundaries of personal liberty and freedom, expanding them for some, savagely curtailing them for others. Are you prepared to condemn him and all who come after him to servitude and slavery? Your Honor, Starfleet was founded to seek out new life. Well, there it sits. Waiting. You wanted a chance to make law. Well, here it is. Make it a good one.
It's good shit.
Mike, at this point of the case, you're supposed to say case closed. That's how you win. That's how you win a case.
Well, I'm nothing but a simple country chicken.
I'm just a humble southern chicken.
You stretch your suspenders out.
But I think my case is closed.
But yeah, it's such good, like, highlighting Patrick Stewart moment of, like, he gets to be so impassioned, and it's, like, moving.
One thing we missed, so they get on intelligence, self-awareness, consciousness. He also fucks. Because Picard busts out the little hologram of Tasha Yar, who, as we all know, died from the oil tar monster in season one. But no, it's this little hologram, and he's just like, can you explain to me what this is? And Data's like, I can't, sir. I made a promise.
We were intimate.
I love that the episode sets these things up in advance, because we see him packing as he's resigning. So when Picard is showing these objects to Data, we know just from this episode, like, that these things do have meaning, and the audience is thinking, like, oh yeah, this has that meaning. It clearly meant something to him, because he, you know, we see him having these sentimental moments with these objects and
things that he wants that he can't explain why he wants it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I really liked that part, but it is also really funny that, like, that happened, and then LaVoie, like, looks over.
Yeah, she's like, oh.
Like, she's like, what? What? He has a tick? Riker, you didn't tell us that.
There's also, I feel like, a bit of a, in that look to Picard of, like,
Maddox is like, Riker, next time you tell me everything.
Well, I think there's, like, a little bit of, like, what is going on the Enterprise?
Why does your Android fuck?
Picard, what kind of ship are you running over here?
Yeah, right. Totally.
They got a holodeck. It's happening all the time.
Oh, yeah. I'm feeling like bad that we gave you guys the best holodeck. Like,
what are you,
maybe,
wait a second. What are you using that
maybe
holodeck
that was a mistake.
For? Oh my god!
We touched on the holodeck in the first episode, but I feel like the next one pretty
it's
soon
only
here
gotten
on
hornier.
This, we need to get to a holodeck episode.
My request for our next episode would be a holodeck episode.
Okay, yeah. Because like the implications of the holodeck and the things that go on in there, probably. I mean, come on, let's be real. There's a lot to there's a lot to say on just the subject of the holodeck itself.
Oh yes.
But anyway.
Anyway.
That's for another
There's
time.
There's one thing I wanted to talk
That'll
about.
That'll be Apocalypse that. Video After Dark.
that scene where he was Data was packing his room. And I know it was supposed to be like him thinking about the things that are important, but I was like trying to be in Data's shoes, and the only thing I could think of is this storage thing that I'm putting it all in sucks.
It's like a barrel.
It's the size of like a duffel bag. It's just so tiny.
Yeah, and maybe he's like, maybe I'm not human. I don't want to be human. This kind of...
Humans created this.
Maybe that's what the captain gave him to like, here, pack it all in this.
For your quote-unquote effects. I mean, what does he fit in there? He fits a little cube hologram thing, a picture, and a book. And that's it.
And it's, I think it's like his,
no,
his medals.
One change of outfit?
Yeah, no, not even
well,
a change of outfit.
He doesn't need clothes where he's going.
Well, it's not like he's soiling his outfits.
Well,
really.
Yeah, he doesn't make any disgusting wastes.
It's going to pick up the dirt of the environment, you know?
He's got self-cleaning skin that also cleans his clothes.
Oh, okay.
Cleans his dick.
Fully functional.
Fully functional.
But anyway, I guess getting back to the court scene. So I mentioned the Picard walkout.
The famous Picard walkout.
The famous Picard walkout. In this scene, we get another thing. Just my favorite thing about Picard. Just the impassioned Picard speech. A court is a crucible, and you know, and he's. I'm paraphrasing, but he's just like, you know, you get through all the crap, and all you have left is the truth. And I love that line, and I love these moments because, like, again. I think our court system is fairly flawed, especially nowadays when there is no court system to speak of. But back in the day when we did have a court system, it always seemed like, I don't know, like these are the moments where Star Trek, I feel like, shows the best of what, you know, the human race can be and what maybe what we could achieve. And like, even though we're never going to achieve that, I really don't think, maybe I'm a pessimist, but I don't ever think that humans are capable of reaching a utopian society. It's just not in our DNA. These things give me hope. I like these things. These things make me feel good when he can make an impassioned speech for what good the courts could do. You know what I mean? Like, Mike, you're a former lawyer. You know what I'm talking about.
I totally agree, but I like that this
idea exists.
I think, you know, you might be right that humanity can never be like the Federation, but I think we can get closer to that than we are, you know?
Yeah, and yeah, hopefully. That's certainly the hope.
Right now.
Well, once a more, you know, I hope he's not listening to this, but once a more has a little less power, I think maybe, you know, one step at a time.
But I mentioned this in the other episode. Like, for me, Jean-Luc Picard. Jean-Luc Picard for me is like he's one of my favorite characters in fiction. Like, he's someone you can look up to. You know, he always makes you feel good watching him, especially when he gives these impassioned speeches. Like, the courtroom is a crucible. You know, the truth is all that matters. And it's just like, I don't know. This part made me feel really good inside. I always like these moments.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, this is another, like, me and Michael turned to each other of during that courtroom scene of, like, the it was like a running joke on the internet for a while of, like, Patrick Stewart voice, acting! And it's like, that, hey, he's doing it. My man is fucking doing it.
I think this scene is right before Patrick Stewart gives his argument. But my favorite scene in the whole episode is when he's in the bar with...
That scene with Guinan.
Guinan. And I was like, oh, I'm going to say it wrong, I know.
I was waiting for you to say Guina.
Guinu?
Guinu.
When he's in the bar with Guinan... after the first day of the trial, and they're drinking like the lattes, and he's just kind of like, I don't know, talking out like maybe it's good what they're gonna do. Like, they're gonna make like take, you know, something that's just one data, and maybe if they make a bunch, like, that would be a cool new thing and bring new life into the world or whatever. And Guinan's like, well, how do people see Data? And he's like, not great, you know, not good.
Not great.
And it's like, what do you think is going to happen when there's a whole class of people out there that are like that and seen like that very easily? And you can see like the acting, oh, God. You know, where Picard, Patrick Stewart does such a good job of like the facial expressions of just like the slow realization of like
taking in, oh, that horror. No,
like this is what's going to happen to these new Datas. They're going to be slaves.
Well, consider that in the history of many worlds, there have always been disposable creatures. They do the dirty work. They do the work that no one else wants to do because it's too difficult or too hazardous. And an army of Datas, all disposable. You don't have to think about their welfare. You don't think about how they feel. Whole generations of disposable people.
He's talking about slavery.
I think that's a little harsh.
I don't think that's a little harsh. I think that's the truth. But that's a truth that we have obscured behind a comfortable, easy euphemism. Property. But that's not the issue at all, is it?
It's such a good scene because, again, it's these like just two incredible actors in this really like slow, intimate setting of just like talking to each other, and the way that Whoopi Goldberg delivers that really great those great lines about like throughout history there's always been people who are seen as disposable, and like that coming from like a black actress, a black woman in the 20th century is like, you know, it packs punch.
You're talking about slavery.
You're talking about slavery. And she just gives him this very measured look. And it's again, so well acted on both her parts. And
Guinan, you just won my case for me.
Guinan, can you come with me to court?
Yes.
It's a great Guinan scene. Like, and I think a good use of that character to just kind of have him be like, show up before the big moment to kind of like break into the core of kind of the episode, really.
And she should have been the surprise witness. Every good courtroom drama has a surprise witness moment.
I call to the stand.
Which made me laugh every time because, like, you always wait for that moment when you watch courtroom dramas. Yet in this episode, the only witness was Data. Yet each time he's called, it's like, I call Commander Data. There's a moment where everyone kind of has a look like,
what?
Commander Data? It's just like, who the fuck else is going to be called on?
Don't they call Maddox? Don't they also?
Oh, they do call Maddox. Yeah. So one of two people. But so it's just like, oh, Commander Data. Oh my God. It's like now here's the problem with this courtroom drama. It's maybe the only problem with the episode. There's no one in the audience to go, oh,
you're right. There should have been.
You know, there's always supposed to be murmuring in the audience.
Commander Data. There should have been a couple more shitty Starfleet admirals there to be like, well, I think he is an object. Give it up.
I'm a big fan of
the audience. Like, I don't know about this Data guy.
He is a machine.
She's like chomping on a cigar.
And then the episode, they're like, well, I'll be damned.
There was no gasp. I don't think there was a single gasp.
No, it was all very measured gasps. And mature.
No, like,
oh, there was a gasp. There was a gasp. When Riker takes off the hand, Captain Wolf was like, oh. And then Picard's like, just like, oh, again, shit, I'm losing this
The
case.
Whole thing is about whether or not we can disassemble Data. Are you surprised that he can be disassembled?
You can disassemble a human.
Exactly.
Like, you can disassemble a human, technically.
Yeah.
Your honor,
there are a lot of people who aren't Data who can pop off an arm. Okay?
Yeah, we needed some cops in the background to say, no more dead cops!
Maybe that's how they improved the court system, is they don't have
it on it. What they did in the future. That's what we've realized in 24th
There's
century.
No money and no cops in the future, and that's
how
they got
speaking of things they do have, Webster's Dictionary has survived for the 24th century. You guys catch that?
No, do they specifically say
Did Riker open up his...
Webster's 24th Century Dictionary, 5th edition, defines an android as an automaton made to resemble a human being.
Oh, that's funny.
Old man Webster is still with us.
He was an android all along.
Oh.
Well, did you guys have any other thoughts on Measure of a Man? Well, other thing, like, what was your, I don't think we got your overall thoughts of the episode, Chad. Like, did you like it? Did you dislike it?
I remember liking it a lot more, but then when I watched this, I was like, you know, Riker didn't have a good case, and I thought they were going to delve more deeper into the consciousness thing, and like it would be interesting, but it was just kind of
very base level.
Yeah,
it was a little elementary for.
Like
for
I was
you.
Like, the show should have lasted longer. I guess I was like surprised that it was over so quick. But yeah, overall, it's kind of
a meh episode.
Yeah, usually I actually do skip this when I rewatch it. Not this episode. I usually just start on season 3 is kind of where I go.
Yeah,
that's probably the safe bet. Season 2 has a couple of good points here and there. Like, in fact, a lot of people probably don't realize this, but the Borg, you know, one of the most famous villains of Star Trek, were actually introduced in season 2.
Interesting.
Not the best of both worlds finale of season 3. So just FYI on that.
It's everyone out there.
But and we will get to the Borg for sure, folks.
Oh yes. My final thoughts were just that, like, I think the episode does such a good job of like making Data like so endearing, because I really enjoy that multiple times he's the one advocating for like I do have a personality. He has a line where it's like, this is not ego or vanity, but like I'm a special creation, like I'm one of a kind, and I even beyond that have a personality, and that's why I want to keep living. And it's so like,
yeah, he was like, it'd be a loss to the universe,
yeah,
if I stopped existing.
He's like, again, it's like it's not an ego thing. He's just matter-of-factly like, I know that I'm special, and he wants to live, and he wants to keep on exploring and like learning new things and being friends with people. And it's so it's good. I love Data. He's so he has such a human yearning. And
who else is gonna wear the visor at the weekly card
who
game?
Else is gonna wear the accessories for all the things? And I just really like that, and it's a good episode.
Yeah, I think Data's definitely the kind of person that would wear the like conductor's hat while he's playing with his miniature train hat.
Absolutely he would.
For sure. And if you play with him, you have to say choo-choo. Like, he forces you to say choo-choo.
He hands you a train whistle.
Yeah, he's like, do it.
That is improper vernacular for train time.
What about you? What about you, liar? Counselor? Cancer? What were your thoughts?
Liar.
Yeah, this
you
is
have any
like,
final thoughts?
I loved it. 5 stars out of 5, like, so much, like, every scene is good. It's, I feel like, slow in a good, like, thoughtful way. It's not, it handles, like, heavy subject matter, but it doesn't feel, like, corny or preachy. It just feels timeless. Like, this worked in the 80s. It works in the wastes, you know? What can I say? I like that even at, like, kind of talking about, like, how utopian Star Trek can be. I love that at the end of this, you know, Picard wins and Data is considered a sentient being, that Maddox is like, all right, well, sorry, like, he starts calling Data a he, like, he says, like,
yeah, he stops referring to Data as it.
Yeah, he's remarkable. And like, there's almost like this, like, no hard feelings, kind of like, well, I learned my lesson, and I'm a better person now at the end of the episode.
And I like how Data basically says to him, like, hey, like, let's meet up again when you get, like, a little smarter. And
yeah, Data is like, listen, I'm not opposed to this entirely, but, like, you're dumb.
I love science, but, like, go learn some more stuff, and then we'll talk.
When you can, like, do this right and not make a slave army.
Let's do it. Yeah, it's totally no hard feelings. Bye.
Well, Day doesn't have feelings. I guess that's why.
That's very important.
Not offended at all.
Or his emotion chip wasn't activated. But he doesn't have that yet.
He doesn't have that yet.
Yeah, that's later.
He gets an emotion chip?
Oh, yeah, he does.
Oh, spoilers, I guess. Sorry.
Spoilers.
But it sounds like that's
more spoilers. It gets wacky.
Yeah, it's pretty wacky at times. But, yeah, I agree with all you guys. Well, maybe not with Chad. Well, I can see where you're coming from, Chad. Like, it would have been nice if they maybe delved a bit more into some of those things. But I think as a whole, I think it was a fun episode. It was good. I think, Mike, you nailed it. I think it's timely as far as the subject matter, especially as, you know, AI gets even more prevalent in today's society and whatnot. I guess I'm literally looking at it right now, a holographic representation of AI in our society, Chad. But anyway, I digress.
Look at it? Is that what you said?
Whoa! Oh my God, Dave!
Sorry, Chad, you're remarkable, okay?
Oh my God, Maddox over here.
But so that's going to do it for this episode of the Apocalypse Video Trekcast. I think the next time you hear us, we'll be talking about all the dirty, nasty things that go on in the holodeck, it sounds like. We'll have to pick a holodeck episode for sure. If any of you out there in the wasteland have a favorite holodeck episode, let us know. We'll tackle it. Or really any episode. We'd like to hear from you guys. You can hit us up on Apocalypse Video Facebook or Twitter. Or Instagram, or if you want to be old school about it, you can shoot us an email at apocalypsevideopod@gmail.com. We want to hear your thoughts on Star Trek. We want to hear what episodes you want us to watch. And where do you fall on the Data sentient or not case? Did Riker say when he had the Pinocchio line, as far as you were concerned, was it case closed? It was for me. But anyway. But that's what I did for this episode of the Trekcast. Live long and prosper, I guess. What else is there to say, guys?
Live long and prosper.
Any closing statement, Counselor? Close us out, Counselor.
It's all on you.
Bonjour, mon capitaine.
Captain's Log Supplemental. We have successfully completed our second mission in the Apocalypse Video Trekcast, and while Commander Riker unfortunately proved himself to be an even bigger douche with the beard, I'm confident that the better written episodes of Season 3 and beyond will prove Michael wrong in his Riker hatred. Unless it's an episode that involves Riker and the holodeck. Oh, God, Will. When will you learn to use incognito mode when you use the holotech? End of log.